You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information.
I think we're recording. Are we recording? What do you think? It looks like we're recording. If we're not, we're going to talk and drink for the next hour.
Sweet.
And we're going to go with that. So I'm going to just assume that I'm doing something right now. So welcome to people out there, which would probably just be us two. This is the Podcast Detroit Network. This is Steve Johnson. This is the Beer Tour Guy Show. And I have a whole stack of cans that Mr. John Pippenbrock, my guest for the next hour, just brought on. And it's a pretty awesome. I guarantee to take pictures and post this on Facebook. But this is pretty exciting. So this is my first solo show, which means I did my first show about 3 weeks ago with Ken from Better on Draft Podcast. And he kind of walked me through what I think I'm supposed to do. We'll see if I'm doing it right. If not, at the end of this, we would have recorded nothing. And John and I got a good buzz on a beautiful, beautiful Wednesday. Wouldn't you say?
Works for me, man.
Cheers. Perfect.
Cheers.
Look at this. So we got this beautiful Braggot right here. I'm sorry, Braggot Mead. Boy, is that tasty.
Damn.
You know, it's even better because it's out of that can.
I'm telling you, I actually love the can packaging. I mean, this is – it's changing the whole landscape of craft beer, beer as a whole. It's fantastic that commodity prices have gone down enough to allow small brewers to package in cans. It's fun.
I have to say that I was slow on the uptick on that to believe that I would like drinking out of a can. It was that mental game that – let's see. The first one I ever had was probably Keweenaw's, some of the Keweenaw brewing beers, and then eventually it would have been Milk King at, when they started doing it here in the Detroit area. And then Rochester Mills did some too, which was part of the joint project there. And I liked them at first, but I don't know if I wanted to just believe it with everything. Like I could drink it in everything. And then I got to say it was probably some of the Oscar Blues beers when I had some of theirs that I said, okay, well, wow, there's lots of things you could do with this.
Right. Yeah. You automatically associate it with like a, you know, lighter, easier drinking beers, stuff that you're just going to crush. And then OB puts out something like, you know, I think it's 10-50.
Yeah.
It's like, holy.
It was 10-50 for sure was the one I drank. And I was just like, oh, my God. Wow. Yeah. Look at this. This came out of a can.
Yeah. It's wild.
Where was I all these years? You know, and then you come in here and there's no session that we got going on right now. I don't see any fluffer.
No, not in this batch. I mean, this is the one we're drinking right now is the lowest alcohol one of all of them. And this is 6.9. This would be considered a session Braggot, I guess, because Braggot's typically 12 to 13%. But we cut this down below 7% and below a certain number, below a certain volume of CO2s, because that way. But mead is taxed as wine, and
right.
Once you go above a certain carbonation level and above a certain alcohol level, it goes into a different tax bracket. It almost triples in tax.
We're already this technical, and we haven't really even introduced ourselves here. We just started talking and drinking, didn't we? So okay, so this is John Pippenbrock that's talking right here about this awesome Braggot. Introduce yourself. Tell me what you do for a living. And we'll get into some normal question stuff a little bit into the show here. But what do you got to say, John?
Well, like Steve said, my name is John. I'm with Coonan Brewing Company. I do beer. That's pretty much it in a nutshell.
How do you do beer?
One at a time.
One at a time. We clearly got some time out of us right here, don't we? Oh, whoa. Now we're yelling into the mics. Okay. Sorry, folks. Yeah. Okay. So what's your main role at Coonan?
My main role is I'm the vice president of marketing and sales. So I handle all of the event related stuff, wholesaler related stuff. I'm the guy who deals with the distributors and any festivals that pop up, all that kind of stuff.
So pretty much if anything wrong happens with Coonan, you need to reach out to John Pippenbrock.
I mean, which it happens anyways.
Nothing wrong would happen anyhow, of course. You guys are flawless. Okay. Wow. This is good.
It's so easy to drink. The honey character still comes through, which is really nice, but it's a wit Braggot. So it's got that orange peel, coriander. It's got that soft mouthfeel from the wheat.
I've definitely never had a wit Braggot before. I guess that's why I liked it right away because I like the wit style. I like mead. I feel like I know what Braggots are, but I feel like I haven't had a ton of them in my day. I could drink more if it was like this, that's for sure.
Yeah, absolutely. Same here. I've never been a huge fan of Braggots personally just because they tend to be higher in alcohol. There's typically a little more residual sugar in there.
Yeah, I'd agree
even if
with
it's
that.
Just perceived sweetness just because it's such a big a big product. But they tend to focus more on grain bills similar to like a Scotch ale or like an Imperial Stout. Beers like that tend to work better in the Braggot category. When you start playing around with lighter beers such as a Belgian Wit and then blending that in with the honey, I mean it's turning the whole concept on its head and it's pretty fun. People were so spooked by this because it's a 6.9% Braggot.
Did you guys release this at the summer solstice?
Yeah, this was one of our solstice releases. Everyone's like, what are you doing releasing a Braggot in the summer? Like, no, trust me. This is a boat beer. And every single person who's cracked is like, wow, it's time to take this out to the golf course.
So this is your first big foray into doing some canning, correct?
Yeah, this is the first time we've ever canned.
Thought
and
so.
This is sort of laying the groundwork, so to speak, and getting ready for our regular package launch, which we were crunching some numbers earlier this week and still have to do a little bit more with that. But within very soon here, I don't want to put an exact time on it because we're still waiting for some label art approval from the federal government. So
yeah, that's
can't
a long
make
process.
Any hard commitments until we get that done. We're at the mercy of the government on that.
Right. So let's back up a little bit, John. So this is me being a former journalist, trying to be a journalist again, I guess. It's some when, where, what, why kind of questions. So when did you start in the beer industry? Why did you get into it? What did you do when you first started?
So I kind of like fell into it. I think that's the way that most people get into the beer industry.
I would agree with that.
You know, you set out to do one thing and then next thing you know, you end up selling beer or making beer or running beer tours or whatever. It just kind of works.
Or being a beer tour guy but then getting a job at Kunin and then leaving the beer tour operator fought a real cool beer tour guy. You mean that? Is that what you're talking about?
Something like that.
Yeah. Just for everyone to know what I'm talking about, John did some tours for me before he really got in full at Kunin Brewing where he works today. So it's kind of a bummer. You just don't find people with a background like that every day that you don't have to explain anything to. So that was pretty cool.
Yeah.
So okay, so you kind of fell into it. So what were some of the first things you were really doing?
Well, so back in 98 was when I really sort of got into it. I wasn't into beer officially yet. I had started working for Pepsi Bottling Group. And so I got into the what we call direct store delivery kind of game. I was a sales guy at Pepsi going in and writing orders and selling in displays and all that.
I remember those days.
And yeah, I got to know the all the other vendors and whatnot and got to know some of the brewery guys and some of the beer guys. I was really fascinated with that side of the business. I'm a beverage guy, period. And I've always followed beverage trends and stuff. There's just something fascinating to me about the industry. And when I started looking more at the beer side of it, there's a lot more integrity in the beer side because it is technically a controlled substance. There's not all this crazy wheeling and dealing. Like, you know, working in non-alcoholic, it's nothing more than you have to be a used car salesman. And it kind of like sucks a little bit of life out of you.
Yeah, I'd say my first 10 years out of college, I was in the consumer packaged goods business, very similar to how you just described it. And I sold paper products to grocery stores.
Mm-hmm.
And wow, yeah, lots of stuff. Like for me to get noticed, how do you get noticed as a sales guy? Well, you got to hit numbers. You got to sell a lot of displays. You got to do some side stuff. Like I sold Huggies diapers. That was part of the portfolio at Kimberly-Clark. And things we couldn't do in the beverage industry, I definitely could do in that world, such as grab the car keys to the manager at that grocery store and then go throw a bunch of packages of diapers in his car
mm-hmm.
for his kid. And then I would slot in new items on the shelf in that store. Like that was a normal way of life.
Yeah.
And then he would buy extra displays and you would eventually get noticed as a salesperson and kind of move up the food chain. That's sort of how people cut their teeth in that world and very – contrasting to the beer industry where you're really not supposed to be doing anything like that and there's
right.
rules and laws tied to that. They're very different. I totally understand what you're where you're coming from.
Yeah, I can remember when the Star Wars prequels were released. I was with Pepsi at the time when Phantom Menace came out, and Pepsi was a primary sponsor of that film. And the Kroger stores were all mandated to get thematic displays and all that. And one of my stores had this beautiful space up front where a bank had just moved out, and I wanted to put in this gigantic, gorgeous display. I had it all drawn out, and I proposed it to the store manager. And it was going to be like I was trying to make a name for myself at that point. It was going to be like a 5,000-case display. It was going to be absolutely massive. And he flat out just looked me in the eye and said, "Man, I could really use a new TV." Okay. So I call up my boss. I'm like, "What do you think?" He goes, "Okay, tell him I'll drop it off to him tomorrow."
Just like that.
Just like that. And that's the way it was done. And that's when I really started to realize, like, you know, yeah, this is cool, but I don't like that side of it. And back to my original point about the beer industry having inherently more integrity just because of not being able to do stuff like that, and the brewers and distributors who do things the right way, who follow the rules. I mean, it, you know, it sounds kind of cheesy, like something you would learn in kindergarten, like, hey, it's cool to follow the rules, but it takes a lot of stress off you too. You know, I'm sorry, I can't install a draft line system for you. It's not going to happen. You're going to have to just not be a cheap ass.
Right.
So so following that, I was in that for a little bit, a couple of years. Believe it was early 2000, I got an opportunity to work for another small non-alcoholic distributor that had just launched Red Bull and Jones Soda, co-launched it into the state. It was launched by a distributor on the west side of the state, and I worked for a distributor over here on the east side that was affiliated, basically purchasing from them. So I got to work with a bunch of those guys, and that really showed me like the more boutique side of non-alcoholic, and that's what really drove my passion into diving further into beer.
Okay.
Being a much more unique product than just, you know, a bottle of soda pop.
Meaning they had a cool pitch. They had a cool way they marketed that brand and how you presented it to customers. And
that's precisely
and the wholesale
it.
Side.
It
yeah, I
wasn't
totally understand
just
that.
Like, okay, here's what it costs you. You know you have to carry it. Here's what you're going to make off it. Blah, 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 blah. Like it was lifestyle focused and more niche brands. And then was there for a little while. Then that distributorship folded because the owner had passed away, and that was fine because that distributor wasn't doing much of anything anyways. Went on to work for Powers Distributing, local beer distributor here at Oakland Macomb County, and did a regular sales route for the first probably year and a half, then transferred into the craft division for the last 3-4 years I was there, and just kept moving throughout the industry since. So officially on the beer side of things, 16 years in the industry overall, 19 years.
Wow. That makes you quite on the veteran side now, as we see a lot of these breweries that are kind of these the first phase of craft beer, at least in Michigan for brew pubs in the 90s. So when you start cranking out a number that's that high, double digits, you've been in it for a while.
Yeah. You know, it doesn't really seem like it either.
No, it doesn't, does it?
It's honestly a fun industry. It's a lot of work. You know, people think, oh, man, you get to drink beer all day. And, well, yeah, there are
that.
Some days like this. Like, hell,
like right
it's,
now, man.
It's 1 o'clock and we're having a beer talking about
and
stuff.
And I didn't think twice about it when you handed it to me.
Well, why would you? It's what we do. It's part of our culture. There's absolutely nothing wrong with having a beer during the day. You know, We have a strict rule in our tap rooms that our bartenders and our servers cannot drink on their shift because they have to responsibly serve the public. And I get squirrely looks from them when I take meetings in the tap room because I'm a beer guy. All of my meetings revolve around beer. You know,
I've taken many a meetings with you in the tap room.
Yeah, you have.
I do know.
And they're sitting there. You can see like their mouths like. They're just salivating like, I want beer too. Like, I'm sorry. You get off in 2 hours. You can have as much beer as you want then.
Right.
But no, there's absolutely nothing wrong with doing that. And I can remember when I was at Powers Distributing, just getting ready to leave for, you know, sales route in the morning, and the owner coming in with 4 or 5 beers in his hand. Guys, I just got these in. We got to try these. We're going to do a taste panel. And it's 7:30 in the morning.
Right.
Like, oh, man, is this okay? And he's like, it's market research. Yeah, it's okay. We're going to do a taste panel. Well, okay. You're the boss.
How can you say no to the boss?
You can't.
I remember when Clubhouse BFD was opening, and your buddy Jason, he was having distributors out there every Wednesday for, gosh, it seemed like 2 months before they opened.
Yeah.
And they would just line a whole bunch up and come in and do the same thing, a big, big tasting panel. That went on forever. And he would just say, hey, man, come on in.
Yeah.
You know, and it would be a Wednesday at pretty similar timing to now. And I'd go in and just like, wow, this is awesome. You know, but as reps, what do you have to learn? You got to learn that balance, don't you?
Exactly.
Not everyone can do that really effectively. I think that's a skill that takes time.
Well, we've seen people leave the industry because they weren't able to find that level of balance. Yeah. And it's unfortunate. You know, you have to be mindful of what you're doing.
Yeah.
You know, we see it a lot more at our festivals, to be honest. You know, the festivals being an opportunity where some of the production staff and some of the taproom staff from multiple breweries, not just my brewery, they get a chance to get out into the wild and experience the culture like we do on a regular basis. But they're not used to, you know, talking to people and still consuming
right
all day long and then blowing off steam at night. It's like, okay, you need to go to bed now. You, the things you're saying and doing are not appropriate. You know, it's finding that balance.
I used to always have a rule when I would be with all my folks at a beer festival, and that was make sure I'm not being recorded or on camera 3 hours into a beer festival.
Yeah.
So let's say it's a 5-hour beer festival, or let's say the halfway point. So by the halfway point beyond, I'm just drinking with people.
Yeah.
And I surely don't want to be on – because no matter how good you are at the balance, you're still a little more lit up at that point. And it's tricky. Now, I don't know. You know, just like you, years of being in the industry, I've just learned that balance that I've kind of figured out.
Right.
Everyone has their own little level for it. Like, I'm not here to tell you how much you should drink at a beer festival. I just know like what my body can handle and what it can't handle. And I just try to stay away from some of the things it can't handle, especially on days where like I'm bringing a bus group to a beer festival, which means I got to get on that bus at the end. I got to count bodies. I got to probably say a couple things, you know, mm-hmm. stuff like that. Like I got to learn that balance. Definitely takes time.
Yeah. And especially with our guild festivals, because of how active I am with the Brewers Guild as well. And I've taken on new responsibilities. Now I'm, you know.
Yeah, talk about that a bit.
So I've been directly involved with the Brewers Guild since this goes back to 04, 05, something like that. I believe it's been about 12 years now.
Okay.
And my role has changed over the years. I'm not a paid employee of the Michigan Brewers Guild, but obviously representing a brewery, I am a member. But I've been a part of the festival team since before I officially started working at Kunin. And initially it just started kind of backing up Eric Brigeman and helping him with, you know, checking in beer orders and stuff like that. And, you know, helping to run the hospitality area before we brought in a full-time catering company that runs all that, Pallet. So now Joe handles all of the
nice food shirt, by the way. Yeah, so he has his Pallet yep. shirt on, just for the record.
Yep, this is my Pallet shirt that Joe made for a bunch of us for the Summer Beer Festival in Ypsilanti that just passed. It was our 20th Summer Beer Festival for the Michigan Brewers Guild.
A festival awesome,
that
as always.
Before I was legally able to drink. So now my role has expanded to where I'm the direct person that deals with security. So they kind of go through me. to deal with mundane stuff, so like our executive director doesn't have to be bothered with that kind of stuff because he's got a whole festival he's running.
I actually talked to him for a whole 4 minutes at the Summer Beer Festival and he wasn't bothered at all and he didn't seem stressed and he was getting a beer.
Yeah.
I couldn't think of the last time I got to do that. It was I was almost surprised. Like I was talking fast and he kind of looked at me like, why are you talking so fast? I'm thinking probably because I only thought I could talk to you for 15 seconds and you'd have to run away.
Right, right.
But he was pretty subdued at that point. This is maybe an hour and a half into it.
Yeah, yeah. It's because it's all pretty much autopilot at this point. There are enough responsible people handling certain aspects of the festival where Graham doesn't have to freak out like he used to. You know, and I'm handling the entertainment now, so I'm dealing with bringing in bands and making sure they're paid and getting to where they're supposed to be. So I'm watching my consumption even more because now I'm dealing with money and I'm dealing with security and police and all that kind of stuff. So, of course, I'm going to have a few beers during the day.
Yeah, well, definitely.
And then, you know, for my staff for the brewery, I'm very clear at the beginning, like, this is what's expected of you. Here is when you're expected to be at the booth. You can drink as much as you want once your responsibilities are done for the day. But if you're going to get drunk, you need to not be wearing branded gear because whenever you're wearing branded gear and whenever you're on the clock, you're representing us as a company. So I want you to do that to the best possible degree. And they get it. They get it. We've got a great team of people, front house, back house, production, everything, and they get it.
I'm lucky. I've kind of approached that the same way with my company, Motor City Brew Tours, and all my tour guides understand that, have a lot of experience or will as they get into it more and get that fact that they're there to offer the service. So in your case, it's your people representing Kunin and pouring beer and presenting why Kunin's a great brewery in Michigan. My people are supposed to be offering service to customers and making sure that they're loving everything that they paid to get there. And that's because we're all basically, at the end of the day, we're in a customer service business, aren't we?
Absolutely. That's absolutely right. And if we're not satisfying the needs of the customer, then we have no reason being in business.
Totally not. And unfortunately, not every and I'm not here to drop names. It doesn't matter. I'm just saying not every brewery seems to approach it that way. But I think it's breweries that have been around the block a little bit that really get it over the years, say, how do you stay in business, right? You stay in business by keeping your customers happy. I'm now 8 years into my tour business, and I constantly have people come up and say, oh, I really had a good time on this and this event. And I'm always looking for that feedback to say, hey, if you're a regular customer, you've ever been on one of my tours and something's not right, please tell me because I want to understand that my service level wasn't where it was supposed to on that. I want to figure out why that happened. I want to fix it. Like, I'm not here to slap someone on the wrist. I'm here to say, all right, this matters to me.
Right.
So if someone doesn't do what they're supposed to do, they're not going to be part of my small inner circle of tour guides that I operate. Because I have people come up, and I'm sure you do all the time, like, oh, I'd love to help you with an event. I'd love to be a tour guide. Or for you, I'm sure it's, could I pour beer at a festival? Or could I help out with this, that, and the other thing? And if they're not willing to understand what's important to you from a service level out of it, then those aren't the people you want around there.
Right, right. Yeah, and we've had people in the past that didn't meet expectations, and I've had to tell them, well, I don't think it's going to work out for you to come to this festival, you know?
In the corporate world, what would we do there? So in the corporate world, you would have a learning session with your boss. They'd sit you down. They'd probably have some forms you're filling out that puts you on some sort of plan.
Yeah, yeah.
All that corporate shit.
It would be something like a coaching.
Oh, there we go. I'm sorry. I'm out so long that I didn't even say that word, right? It would be a coaching session.
Right.
Opportunity to improve.
Right, yeah. Yeah,
as opposed to just saying what it is, you're just not going to work out, so you're fired.
Yeah. That's exactly it.
Yeah. That's why our world's a little better. We don't automatically have to do that with everything.
We give people a lot of chances too in our industry as a whole. You know, we understand that, you know, everyone's got flaws and everyone screws up, and especially when alcohol is in the mix. So there's always much more benefit of the doubt given in our industry than anything else. I mean, can you imagine another type of business where someone could get ridiculously raging drunk at a company event, like a beer festival, but translate that to another industry, and then still have their job the next day?
I can't. No.
I mean, except maybe some parts of government, but
– True. Yeah. Oh, boy. That would be a whole other show, wouldn't it?
No, that would be a whole other show.
I kind of agree with
that. I don't know if you want to take on the subject of politics,
I don't.
Though, Steve.
This
That's
is
probably
just,
not the best thing to
this
do.
This is just in case anyone forgot. This is the Beer Tour Guy show and not the political show for
yeah,
sure. I'm no, sure on the know. Podcast Detroit Network there's a bunch of shows to tackle that subject that I don't know anything about. So I'm here to say that I'm really enjoying this this Braggot mead here. This I'm sorry, white Braggot.
Wit Braggot.
I'm sorry. I keep looking at it wanting to say white because it's such a white label and we're white boys. So – It's a Wit Braggot Mead, 6.9%, super tasty. I drink a little slower than John though. You could definitely tell that I'm a tour guide because I drink at a tour guide pace.
Right.
And I'm typically about half a beer down to most of my peers now when I drink. That's kind of the slowness that my wife's probably beat into my head over the years.
Well, I did open two cans of this because we were trying to get the can pop recorded.
Yeah,
and
I wasn't fast
the first
enough.
One before we were recording. So, well, yeah. They're both open. I guess we got to drink them.
I'll get better. Hopefully I'm recording right now. It sure looks like I'm recording right now. I don't know. We'll see.
If not, this is fun, man.
Yeah, who cares? We're drinking mead right now inside a studio. No one's here because it's middle of the day. And it sure looks important in this room with a laptop and mics and this crazy foam green and gray up on the boards here, so on the walls. I say we just keep going. Do we really need a break? Do you need a break? We're only going for an hour.
I'm cool.
If you're cool, I'm cool. Maybe it's a little hot in here, but that's about it. Maybe it's the mead too. I don't know. It's hard to say.
Could be. There's no one else in here. I can crack the door.
Yeah. You know, I was shutting the door like we needed to be all private, but it totally brings like way more airflow in here as we open up that door. So, okay. So now you've been in the industry a bunch of years, like you said. I just saw you talk at an industry panel up at Oda Supply in Ferndale. That was a couple of weeks ago, you mm-hmm. and a whole bunch of your peers. That was a lot of fun. I hadn't been to one of those in a while. I'd kind of forgotten how much fun it was to listen to stuff like that and have people from different aspects of the alcohol industry kind of talk about it. But I have to say, like you and then we had Mr. Travis Fritz from Old Nation, and both of you had a lot of really cool stuff to say and probably got a bit more mic time just because you guys did have – a lot more to say. What do you think coming out of that? Was that a lot of fun? Do you like getting a chance to do stuff like that and kind of share your thoughts to what was probably an audience that was a lot of industry folks or probably a lot of pretty big beer nerds that were there listening?
Yeah, that was really interesting. It's the first time I'd ever done a panel discussion that had consumers attend it.
Yeah.
You know, anyone that I've ever done in the past has been at an industry trade show or conference. And never had the opportunity to do something like this. So that was really unique. And the fact that it covered all aspects of the beverage industry was really cool. You know, we had one guy representing a distillery. We had another guy representing an on-premise retailer. We had another guy representing an off-premise retailer. We had meadery. We had cidery. We had, brewers. We had distributors. We had literally everything. And that was really cool to see the unique take that everyone had on the topics presented.
Who's the I can't think of that. What's the first name of the guy from Holiday Market?
That's Ashley.
Ashley. He was very well spoken.
Absolutely.
I know, I've always been impressed with their beer selection there, and I don't shop there necessarily on a regular basis, but I know they have a great selection. And after that, it made me go back in there. Because I had a friend in from Milwaukee and she wanted to buy a bunch of beer. And I go, oh, I got a place. Mm-hmm. It's just on this panel. And Ashley was up there talking. And it was a Sunday afternoon. He wasn't there, but one of his people, they basically have someone planted on that aisle. And he was there ready to answer questions, super educated, almost at the same tier as Ashley was being up on the stage. So very impressive job that they're doing there. You can't say that for every store you go into. Because not every store has the resources to put a person there like that. Like that's not always realistic.
Right.
Wow. What a selection in there. But I really enjoyed kind of his comments about the industry and talking about how crowded the packaged marketplace is now. Mm-hmm. I don't know. Would you like to share some thoughts on maybe that side of it?
Well, yeah, it's
on premise or off premise.
Yeah,
for that matter.
It's becoming real challenging overall because the more and more breweries that keep opening, it's starting to slow down a little bit. But for the last couple of years, almost every single brewery that opened had this pie in the sky ideal of becoming a big distributing brewery. And that's all well and good, but you also have to have realistic goals set for yourself. I think there's a lot of room for more and more breweries to continue to open. But and this is something that I mentioned at the panel that you know, Ken sent me some information following up after that. What I think there is a real need for is more breweries to open that serve their small local community and become those community gathering places. Those tap rooms where people can come together and, you know, and share common ideas over a pint. What there is not a lot of room for are more big distributing breweries, both in-state breweries and new breweries coming to the state. There's a finite amount of shelf space. There's a finite number of faucets on the draft lines. And there's only so many more ways we can cut up the pie. You know, the consumer base is what it is. And yes, it will continue to increase. Fact is, the beer industry as a whole, beer sales have been trending down for about 10 years in a row.
Well, we're blaming all that on wine and spirits now, aren't we?
Yeah, thanks to some creative spinning by Anheuser-Busch InBev, we're blaming all of that on wine and spirits. And there is a little bit of truth.
But that is a little bit of – yeah. I'm not going to say that's total bull, is it? That there's some truth when you look at the stats.
There definitely is some truth to that, but their stance that they've made was just totally deflective. That was trying to get people to stop paying attention to what they're doing. Like – oh, don't blame us. We're the good guys. We love craft. We're buying craft breweries to help them. You should be mad at those guys over there because they make a liquid that's not like what you make. And that's garbage. They're, like I said, just deflecting, and they're trying to create more divisiveness just in a different way when we should be reaching out to wine and spirits and learning from them. If they're showing positive growth trends overall,
what are they doing? Yeah, what are they doing that we can learn from?
Yeah, I want to know. You know, a friend of mine is the executive director for the Arizona Craft Brewers Guild, Rob Fulmer, saw something that he had posted on Facebook last week and said that brewers need to visit wineries and see how wineries do wine flights. And he described this experience that he encountered visiting a couple of wineries, that the person serving the flight takes the time to describe in painful detail every single aspect of what you're going to be tasting and telling you the story behind the beer. We don't spend enough time doing that in the beer industry.
Yeah, I would totally agree with that. That would be a big gripe of mine now. It's almost like we've started to take it for granted a little too much.
Yeah.
I could think back in the day when I first started going to breweries, what got me excited was bellying up to that bar at a new place I've never been to and having a conversation with whoever was pouring that beer or maybe whoever else was sitting up by that bar and getting a sampler. We didn't call it a flight then. And it was relatively inexpensive to do that. And that person would then start talking to me about all the beer. Today, that's not really the case. Breweries are a lot of times super busy and don't. Maybe they don't have the time, or maybe they don't want to spend time doing things like that.
Well, it's something that I want to talk more about with our management staff internally to make sure that we're doing things right. Because if we're not, and I don't sit in our tap room and you know, I don't look for that experience because
you don't have a closed circuit camera that's staring at each of them every time they're talking to customers.
Hell no. Hell no. I like to scare some of them sometimes, like, you know, you're on camera. You know, I saw that. And they'll be like, saw what? I'll be like, uh-huh, exactly.
I just think it's a big opportunity to revisit that part of it. It's actually probably my next blog post. I'm going to talk about this because it's been like spinning around in my head a bit lately. And as a tour operator, I take people into lots of different breweries. And very rarely when I bring groups in, do I have the owner, brewer, manager hang out with the group as we're doing the tasting and talk through everything? A lot of times they're, for whatever reason, can't do that. Or if I get a tour, sometimes it's kind of half-ass.
Yeah.
At some places, you know, like I said, I'm not here to bash any place. I'm just giving constructive thoughts as a whole. And I miss that. And then when I do get that, I forget how much I liked it. And I'm excited about it. And what do you think I go out and do after I do have a positive experience where they take me through some tasting like that? What do you think I do?
Well, you're going to make sure that you go back to that brewery as a consumer yourself and as a tour operator to make sure that they end up on your regular roster.
And I'm telling people about that.
Yeah.
Oh, my God, I had this amazing experience. Like the first time, I'll give you one brewery's example that did it really awesome. It was Eternity Brewing out in Howell, husband-wife team there. Very enthusiastic. Nice little place in a strip mall. They're not going to set the world on fire with their size or anything like that. They don't need to. And the first time I brought a group in there, they were 100% on point, took us through a guided 3-beer tasting, and then they took everyone in the back and did a brief little tour. Very simple. It was all of like an hour that I was in there. And that was it. We're in, we're out, right? And it was a fun time. And you know what? All those people who left there on the 3-tour route I did that day were like, I can't wait to go back to Eternity Brewing Company and try some of the stuff I tried because I had this positive experience. I felt like I was part of what they were doing.
Yeah, absolutely.
That's a great thing. And that's what I hope to provide every time I take people to a brewery. It just doesn't always shake out like that as so many more breweries are opening up and I'm going to new places. I don't always have the time to vet every place like that or set that expectation, or maybe they just don't want to do that. And that's just how it ends up being.
Well, you know, when I had done tours for you in the past, you know, I found myself speaking to a lot of the beers and a lot of the process, a lot
sure.
of the history, where the brewer or manager or marketing individual at whatever place was either not available or not able to dedicate the time. I can't fault them for it because we've all gotten ridiculously busy in this industry over the last couple of years. But still, like you said, when you get used to one thing, like in our formative days in this industry, when that was the way it was done, it's like, man, what's going on? How can we fix this? How can we get back to that more one-on-one? Because that is, as you said, when you took that group to Eternity Brewing Company, they felt that they really experienced something unique there, and they felt a part of it, and they felt important. And they're going to continue to frequent that place, and they're going to tell their friends about it. And the best marketing that any of us has as brewers, as small business owners, period, is word of mouth.
Very true. Like, that's my whole goal. I want them to make sure that they love the breweries they went to and that the way I offered that service to them was great, so that they talk about those breweries and they talk about it in the context of coming on one of my tours, so that I'm not just like another I just rent a bus and I showed up at breweries guy. I don't want to be that guy. I want to be the all-inclusive, I gave you a great experience guy at the places I took you to. And I've used beer as the context for that throughout the whole business model. But back to what you said about wineries, I will say that is something that I always appreciated about wineries is that the majority of wineries in their tasting rooms, they're really all designed that way. Mm-hmm. They're designed around that, and then they're designed at the end after you've sampled those. What do some of them do at the back end of that after you've done it? What do they try to get you to do?
Well, they try to get you to buy product to take with you.
You got it. It's ingenious.
I mean, that's like offering dessert before presenting the check at dinner.
Yep.
You know, like a smart server at a fine dining restaurant, before they present the check to you, can I interest you in some dessert tonight? How about this? And then they describe it. You know, they're trying to bump up that bottom line on the check, but they're also enhancing your experience. And like you said, it's all about the experience. I say this all the time. We don't sell a product. We sell an experience.
So if I had more breweries at the end of that, tie back in cool stuff they could buy to go. I would say when I first started, I saw more of that, meaning I had more customers that were buying growlers to go. This was kind of pre as many packaged cans and bottles as we see today, but it was mainly growler sales.
Mm-hmm.
And my bosses would be full of that. There would be times where we'd have 12, 15 growlers on a 15 to 20 person tour, and I'd have a couple coolers and milk crates. Nowadays, I don't even bring that stuff on the bus that often because I have very little of that. I don't know where that change, why that change has totally occurred, but I'm sure in the wine industry you probably haven't seen that kind of change and that people are probably still buying bottles to go. I sure do every time I go to a winery. I definitely don't do that like I used to with breweries. And it could just be because I can get the product in more places than I used to be. That I'm sure that's part
could
of it.
Could be.
Right? But it's also –
but the breweries need to then offer something else unique. You know, make sure that you have – T-shirts in stock, which is something that we need to get better at, which all of us need to get better
at. Like this awesome Kunin shirt that I'm wearing right now. You know how I got this?
How'd you get it?
I got this through, I think it was a Groupon offer you did many years ago. And I'm trying to think of what the package was. It was like two shirts, probably two tasting flights, maybe a growler somewhere in there. We would probably remember because you probably created it. I cannot think of when I did this, though. I'm sure it was 5-6 years ago. And your staff was making fun of me when I showed up with it.
Right.
Because they're like, why are you here with this? I'm like, it's a cool deal. And I don't know. I'm supporting.
I remember giving you shit for it. Like, yeah. Steve,
what are you doing?
What are you doing,
right?
Man?
Right?
You can have a shirt.
I would
you
just
want
give
it.
You a shirt. And I'm like, no, I want to support you. But I have the best hoodie ever that you gave me on my, well, it was really my 41st. Birthday celebration,
yeah.
Now that I say that, if I'm saying that right. I feel so old saying that. And you got me this amazing – the thicker weight Kunin hoodie.
Well, it was cold that year, man.
It was super cold. You did that.
Was that,
and
what, two years ago?
No. Let's see. I'm going to be 45 in December, so that was almost four years ago. Isn't that crazy?
Dang, man.
Yikes. Boy, was I lit up that day.
Oh, yeah, you were.
You were stop one. No, wait. Maybe you were stop two. You were stop two because I did Dragon Mead – Kunin and Falling Down in December to celebrate my 41st birthday. And it was the first time.
But I left my vehicle at Dragon Mead.
Oh, yeah.
Because that's my birthday
right.
is the 7th, remember?
That's
so
right.
I jumped on and just.
It was the dual birthday sort of celebration.
I'm like, yeah, this is Steve's show, but I'm going to jump on this too.
That was what we call a real good day.
Oh, yeah.
Like it couldn't have been. I always say, well, I had handlers. And we even had someone doing video on that. So if you go to MotorCityBrewTours.com, my tour company website, if you click on the About Us link, you can see the video. And it's a video of Drag Mead Brewery, Kunin Brewing, and a little bit of Falling Down. And I had a camera crew guy with me. I had a guy with me with the camera. And he was filming us that day on the tour so that we could show you an example of what a brewery bus tour looked like. So basically, I let everyone – it was a – birthday gift to myself by inviting everyone on the bus, and I just paid for the whole day. My wife and I paid for the whole day. And then we said, by the way, we're going to video this. We're going to use this video later and have it all produced. It was like all around like a crazy fun kind of day.
Yeah, it was really cool.
Good way to celebrate a birthday, that's for sure.
Absolutely.
Somewhere in there, what did you slip me? Oh, my God. It was let's see. It would be red. I can't even think of the name of it.
What did I get? A beer?
Yeah, I know. So it was.
Oh, did I give you a raspberry Eisenbach?
Oh, my God. That's it. It was a raspberry Eisenbach. Yeah, somewhere in there. You either gave me the bottle or you cracked open a bottle.
I think I cracked open a bottle
in front
for
of
us
me.
To share. Yeah.
Yeah, I'm sure later.
Like, here, happy birthday.
And then I'm walking like, oh, my God, I'm getting a drink. You know?
I think that's why we didn't film as much when we got to Falling Down because, you know.
Very true. Yeah. Sorry to Falling Down, which would be a sponsor of Podcast Detroit and the studio we're in now. It is nothing against you guys. We had a lot of fun in there.
But
at that point, we were a little lit up. So
our Warren neighbors.
Mm-hmm. We call that the Warren Beer Triangle.
We're doing a big event with Falling Down and with Dragon Mead coming up here at the end of September, too.
So what's that going to be? Why don't you talk about that for a minute?
So Henry Bowman from the city of Warren approached me, oh, man, it must have been about a year ago, and said, I want to do a home brewing event. And yada, 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 long story short, we did this inaugural homebrewing event / Macomb County focused beer festival back a few months back called the Warren Big Brew. And that went ridiculously well. We had double our projected attendance for a year one event. The event finished in the black, which is great because
– first year in the black.
Yeah.
Wow. That's like unheard of.
Huge. And, you know, it was charity focused. We worked with Warren Kiwanis and also the Arsenal Democracy Museum, which is building a physical space in Veterans Park in Warren. It was just a really, really, really cool event in Halmich Park in Warren. So then Henry approaches me about, I'd say 2 months ago and says, I want to do another event. I want to do an Oktoberfest and I want to do just Warren breweries. So I reached out to Dragon Mead and to Falling Down and got them on board. So we're doing it's the last Saturday in September. I believe it's the 30th.
Okay.
If I'm not mistaken here.
Where's our secretaries when we need them to like pull up stuff like this?
Yeah, no kidding.
I wish I had one of those. The 30th would be the Saturday in September.
Yeah, so September 30th in Halmich Park. And all the information is posted on Facebook now. You can look up Warren Oktoberfest. And we've got a huge marketing push going behind
it. Or you go to kbrewery.com and click on events.
Yep, we'll have it listed on there. Dragon Mead has it on their event info. But it's going to be a day-long event, noon to 9 p.m. We've got a bunch of live music, some great food from some local food vendors, and all three Warren breweries featuring our interpretations of the Oktoberfest style, plus a handful of other beers available as well. So
I'm thirsty
not so
just
much
thinking about
beer
it.
Tasting. This is going to be more like a traditional Oktoberfest. Like, hey, you know, come grab a big liter Stein and hang out and listen to some cool bands. You know, wear your Lederhosen and your dirndl and. You know.
We know you got a really cool German-inspired outfit, don't you?
Oh, yeah. I'm going to wear my suit. I have a suit that's printed
it's one
like
of my
the
favorite pictures.
Bavarian royal flag.
I got a picture from the fall beer festival probably 3-4 years ago, a real sunny day. I got a picture next to you with that someone
took. Did you see me at the summer beer festival this year or at our summer solstice? I can't recall.
No. Oh, I didn't.
So
either.
So I now have a flamingo print.
Oh,
suit.
Wait. No, I did see you at the summer beer fest. How could I forget that? Yeah. I just don't have a picture of it, unfortunately.
Yeah, that's pretty wild. And I had just after the summer beer festival, I had the pants cut into shorts and hemmed. So now it's a flamingo print suit with short pants.
Wow.
And it's perfect for Burning Foot Beer Festival this weekend because I'll be standing in
Lake
Michigan.
That's where you're going to be this weekend. So that's in Muskegon, correct?
Muskegon,
Burning Foot.
Correct.
I've never gotten to go to that one. That sounds like that would be a pretty epically awesome event. I've had other people tell me about it. They basically, you're basically all out on the beach and they do what, like a huge circle and all the breweries around in a big circle? Is that essentially how it works?
Yeah, and it literally is the beer version of Burning Man. So at the end of the festival, they light this big thing on fire that has it's shaped like a huge hop cone at the top and just burns into the night. It's the coolest thing.
I don't see how that couldn't be cool. Speaking of burning into the night, let's switch it up. I don't know if
that was the best segue.
I don't know if that's
Steve,
the best segue either, but that's all right because now we're pouring an original Gnome Double Amber Ale. Which I was in the other day on that same Sunday when I said I went to Holiday Market. I took my wife was with me and we went. Well, one, we started with the Pierogi Fest at Sweetest Heart of Mary in downtown Detroit.
Oh, beautiful.
It was a totally gorgeous day to do that too. So we were pretty happy, little Polish beer in our belly, lots of pierogies in our belly. And then we're leaving there and it's kind of like, well, what's next? And I guess I didn't really have a plan after that. So after that, we said we're kind of driving down 75. I got my buddy Chris and then my wife's friend Jessica and the four of us are in the car. We're like, where should we go? And I go, well, ladies, you can decide. And my wife's like, well, it's somewhere I can drink. So I'm like, well, all right. That starts to limit it down a little bit. So we went into Kunin on a Sunday, which I never get a chance to do that. It's so funny being in this industry sometimes just – hanging out at a brewery on an off day where you don't have people in tow and you don't have to really do anything. You can just sit there like normal folk is pretty awesome. And like those are some of the days like I totally love just being alive. And we went there and this beer was there, which I didn't try because I was trying to be low ABV. But then after I had one fluffer, I was just like, you know what? I need something. I needed some coffee. So what do you think I got?
Unless you got the Imperial Creme Brulee.
I totally did, right? So cheers to our second beer here. This is the original Gnome Double Amber Ale, clocking in at 8.5%. Just a nice light Wednesday afternoon beer.
Yeah, there you go. This came to be because our packaging and logistics manager, Leon, you know, we call him the Gnome because he looks like a gnome. It's pretty lazy.
Is that tasty? Sorry.
No,
I can't.
It
I have
is
to stop
ridiculously
you. That is super tasty.
So Leon kind of put together the concept for this beer, and then a couple of our brewers went ahead and built the grain bill and brewed it and got with Leon, and he decided which hops he wanted to be in that beer at which certain points, and it came out pretty amazing. You know, combination of Hallertau Blanc and El Dorado. So it's got like a big punchy citrus character, but then the Hallertau Blanc almost comes across as sort of like, you know, almost grapey with like a little bit of a traditional noble hop character as well. It's really, really unique. It's fun. We call it OG, the original gnome.
Yeah,
Leon,
I like that name.
Original gnome. You know, that's going back to
if we had a better studio or something, I'm sure someone would queue up a little bit of OG original gangster music right now. But right. I don't have those skills because I'm a virgin at this. So maybe someday in better episodes, I'll be able to queue up music when cool stuff like
you
that is
coming. You
could
probably overdub something afterwards for the archived version.
Yeah,
of this
so
show.
Maybe the technical team here at the Beer Tour Guy show, which would be Ken from Better on Draft, his show, maybe he'll be able to help me out with that because beyond that, I barely know what I'm doing. But that's all right because we're sitting here drinking beer, talking on the mics, and that's pretty much all we needed to do, wasn't it?
Yeah, pretty much.
So what was I saying about burning stuff? Yeah, that had nothing to do with this beer though. So okay, so you're a lover of music that might burn stuff. How about I say it that way? Right? You like that? Okay, I could pull it
all
in.
All right,
there.
You're really stretching this segue here,
right?
But.
So no, you're a lover of punk rock, you're a lover of metal, right? So
yeah.
All right, so if you had a triple bill and it was the last show you could ever go to and it'd be three bands. This is putting you totally on the spot,
ooh.
Right? Last show. The world's going to blow up tomorrow. And this is your last show. Three bands. Doesn't matter what order they're in.
Oof.
I know. That's hard, isn't it? From those types of genres, though, which is your bread and butter anyhow.
Misfits, Rancid, Black Flag.
Wow. Whoa.
Original lineup of Misfits.
Well, of course. Yeah, definitely.
I mean, the Michael Graves era was cool, but it was different. And Jerry only on vocals is a complete waste of time. It's got to be
It's got to be Glenn Danzig. I totally agree with that. Wow. Okay. And then Black Flag.
Black Flag.
Who would be on
vocals?
See, that's a harder one.
That's a harder one. I think you'd have to have Keith and Henry both there.
Oh, I like that.
There was two completely different sounds. And then there was everybody else that sang in between. Dez did vocals for a while. They had guys that would come in and just do one song, and it was a song that had already been recorded three or four times.
Yeah,
they
you
had
can't
that
count
real,
that.
Like, in-between weird
they
period.
They definitely did. I couldn't even name them all from that standpoint.
Most of them, they don't even credit with their real names. If you look on the credits nowadays, they give them made-up names because they were just paying the guys by the hour to come in and lay down vocals, and they didn't even really like most of these dudes. So
Well, okay, so you said Rancid in there. So you just recently saw Rancid, so did I.
Yep.
We didn't see each other at that show or anything like that. But I actually had seats, like nice seats, that my friend Chris kind of hooked us up with. So he's pretty anal about where he picks his seats for good reason.
Nice.
That was a great show.
That was wild. It was
a hot night, like it was hot temperature-wise. But so for anyone who doesn't know what we're talking about, Rancid was here. They played at Freedom Hill a few weeks back with Dropkick Murphys and
Bouncing Souls.
Bouncing Souls.
And Jake Burns, the original vocalist from Stiff Little Fingers.
He did acoustic to kind of warm it up. Then we had Bouncing Souls. Then it was Rancid, then Dropkick Murphys. But the way the tours worked is they flip-flop depending on the date. That was my first time seeing Rancid live. Although I'm familiar with all the music, I definitely know him from the early days of Operation Ivy.
Yeah.
And that would be when I first started to get into music and with some music that really, changed me.
Yeah.
And going into that show, I was listening to tons of Op Ivy and tons of Rancid. Are they really impressive live. For a band that's been around the block as many years as they've been, those vocals still come through like so well in a live show. It just blows my mind.
Those guys have so much energy still this many years on of just playing, you know, rowdy ass punk rock. And, you know, you listen to the newest album that just came out and it sounds like they haven't skipped a beat since, you know, the early to mid 90s.
That's what I thought. That was the funny thing of it. It was like the night before I'm on like – it's so funny because on Amazon Music, if you have like a Prime subscription, you can get the free part of Amazon Music. And there's lots of music you can still kind of save to your playlist, and it had all the old Rancid stuff was on there, just free. Mm-hmm. And I'm just thinking, it shows how old I am, or old we are, I guess we could say. I'm a little older than you, but wow. It, I don't need to buy it now. And I, all those same memories back of when I listened to that and I was a little rougher around the edges than I would be now. Wow, brings back some good memories. That's a good triple play. I'm pretty impressed by that. On the Black Flag side, have you ever seen Henry Rollins do his spoken word stuff?
Not live. I've seen it, like, not live in person, I should say. I've seen some television specials, but never actually experienced it live in person.
It's very different. I saw him in Ann Arbor. Let's see, what would that have been? Maybe they're in the Michigan Theater in Ann Arbor. Mm-hmm. Yeah. I was in college still, so this would have been in the mid-90s when I saw him.
So that was when he was just starting out doing the spoken word
stuff.
It was.
Like,
really.
He'd only had a couple of them out at that point. I'm sure I didn't know much about it when I went there. I really had no idea what to expect. And it was really interesting to see something like that live. It's a total switch. Like, if you're going there to slam, to, like, be in the pit, like, that's not how that works. Like,
right.
You're pretty much kind of sitting down, and he's – on a mic, like he's a, I don't want to say stand-up comedian because it's quieter than that.
There definitely is some comedy that he injects into it, but it's his brand of comedy. So
it is, right?
It's a little dry.
Yeah.
And I dig that.
I liked it, and like it put me on a path for probably a couple years where I listened to all those CDs that he had released on spoken word, and what an interesting voice.
Mm-hmm.
What an interesting viewpoint that he's had. And then just to see what he's done over the last so many years has been pretty interesting too. And I got to see Rollins Band as a band a bunch of times. Have you seen – I'm assuming you've seen Rollins Band before?
I believe I saw Rollins Band once on one of those package tours.
Might have been Vans Warped Tour when I saw him, but I'm not sure.
You know what? It might have been on a Warped Tour. Yeah, that sounds right.
Phoenix Plaza Amphitheater.
Yeah.
I remember seeing them there once.
Which rumor has it they're going to be opening back up again.
We'll see, right? There's been a lot of talk back and forth of what Pontiac's going to do with that property.
Yeah. I mean, that was an amazing venue.
Wow.
Amazing venue.
We've almost made it an hour. We could have probably gone a whole hour just on music.
Yeah.
That was definitely something you and I, when we first started to get to know each other, I realized that I had some similar tastes in my younger days, similar tastes that I'm sure you probably wouldn't have expected when you first met me. So, John, okay. So let's kind of wrap this up here, and then we'll go on with our drinking, and we'll probably hit the stop button on this so that you don't hear the rest of it. It'll be kind of secret stuff. I want to thank you for coming on the show today.
My pleasure.
If people want to get more information about Koonin Brewery, how do they do that?
You can come visit either of our tap rooms at the corner of Chicago and Mound in Warren, or on Grosbeck just south of 16 Mile in Clinton Township, or you can go to kbrewery.com, or you can look us up on all the socials. We're all over the place.
All over the place. I love hearing that. So one of my favorite breweries, don't write that down anywhere. I must get asked that a zillion times a year, but it definitely is in this case. Especially if I'm drinking Original Gnome Double Amber Ale. Okay, well, I want to thank everybody for listening on the Beer Tour Guy show. On our next show, we're going to have the fine folks from Bee Nectar Meadery on the show. The ladies, though, no boys.
Nice.
I'm interviewing on this one. Only the ladies.
Those guys are a bunch of nerds. Anyways.
I know.
The
we
chicks
don't,
are the ones that really
we don't
do
want them, man. I want some
there.
Ladies. I'm going to take some pictures in the studio. It's going to be good promo material. But, John, I want to thank you for coming on this afternoon on the Beer Tour Guy show. You want to learn more about the Beer Tour Guy show, you can check out MotorCityBrewTours.com. You can check me out on Facebook, Instagram, Twitter. You can also go to Better on Draft website where this podcast will get reposted. And I want to thank everyone for listening. You guys have a nice day.
See ya.